9to5.cc. We're not working. Why should you? Thanks for listening.
Hey everyone, welcome back to a brand new episode of the Go Plug Yourself podcast. I don't know if you've heard, but I mean, most of our listeners are in Canada, so hopefully you've heard, but we're about to have an election on Monday. That is 4 days from now, if I did my math correctly. It's a crazy time of year, the elections always, and now with the pandemic, it's even crazier. And if you've been following the news, it's even crazier than all of that. So this week, we decided to have member of the Green Party, Sam Fairbrother, on to talk a little bit about politics, but also more of his journey as an environmentalist from the Climate March in Montreal a couple years back to now running as a representative of the Green Party. If you want to learn more about what Sam stands for, you can obviously check out the Green Party's website, or you can just head to samfairbrother.ca and find out a little bit more about his activities. Also, if you're listening to this and it is Thursday morning, September 16th, you can go to Girouard Park this afternoon and have a bench chat with Sam. This is something that he's been doing as he builds up to the election. At Girouard Park from 3 p.m. to 5 p.m., you can go and chat with Sam in the park. So if you're listening to this Thursday morning, there's still time to go to his last bench chat in Girouard before the election. So you can actually go out and meet him in person and maybe talk to him and learn a little bit about his values, the Green Party's values, why you should vote, what this means if the world is coming to an end in a climate disaster. Spoilers, it kind of is. And what that means to the future of not just Canada, but the entire planet. Anyway, Lawrence and I sit down, talk with Sam. It's a great chat. Enjoy the show.
Go plug yourself, you plug and mother plugger. Go plug yourself, you plug and mother plugger. Go plug yourself, you plug and mother plugger. Go plug yourself, it's time for another Go Plug Yourself podcast.
Lawrence, I want to know, I realized when we booked this episode that it felt like it was just very recently that we were having a federal election. And it was.
Yep.
It was only less than 2 years.
Yes. Just under 2 years.
Just under 2 years. It was one of the first episodes, I think, where you really like stepped up as co-host. And that was almost like 2 years ago.
Yeah, it was less than 2 years ago, but it was also a different world ago. It was also a completely different universe.
Yeah,
and lifestyle.
We were not recording remotely. We were at the back of Grumpy's.
No. We were in the back of a very loud and boisterous Grumpy's bar talking to the Green Party candidate, whose name was Green, which I remember. And
yep.
And Robert Green.
And it was a great time. We had a good conversation, and then the world fell apart. So now we have to, you know, our next election, we have to talk remotely, which is different, but we're here. We're doing it. Why not?
Yeah. It's also a reminder that the Canadian political system doesn't have terms, and it seems so fast. It's just like,
well,
jump in at any time, Sam.
We
haven't formally introduced you, but you look like you had something to say.
Well, usually on podcasts, if we were good at podcasting, we would mention that our guest this week is Sam Fairbrother, who is the Green Party candidate in NDG Westmount and a student in environmental sciences at McGill. That's what we should have done. But now that we haven't
Robert
done
Green's
that,
predecessor as the candidate for the NDG
predecessor is before. He's after.
Yes.
Damn so it's
like, I am the successor.
I am
the successor to Robert Green.
You're not tuning into this podcast for words. You're tuning in for conversations which have words. And look, maybe we've had big meals. Maybe we've all had a hefty meal right before and we are struggling to stay awake. This, I don't know. Maybe that's specific to me. I don't know, but we're doing our best. So I think what's important.
Successor, yeah. Robert Green's successor as the Côte d'Anneige NDG riding.
NDG Westmount.
NDG Westmount.
I just said Côte d'Anneige NDG is at a different, it's at a different level. I think that might be the provincial delineation.
I think it's also also local, because we had Sue Montgomery on, who is the current mayor of the, because the borough is Côte de Neige-NDG.
Yeah, maybe,
so the
maybe
borough
it's at the municipal
is that, but the ridings
level,
are different.
Yeah.
As the opening of this podcast, politics are complicated, guys, and like ridings and boroughs and everything else is just another layer of complication on top of it. But it's an election, and it's been less than it's. I guess, Sam, do you know the exact time? My guess is,
I believe the last election was October 19th, I want to say.
Okay.
I believe it was in later October, so we're 1 month short of that, of it being 2 years.
So 23 months, that's, again, so very, very fast.
It's been, obviously, COVID has distorted time in both ways, where things seem like it's been no time, and the other thing seems like it's been an eternity. Mm-hmm. I remember these dates really clearly because that was the time of a lot of turmoil in my life in a positive way.
Oh, okay. Positive turmoil. You don't always hear that.
Yeah, my life had been pretty static for a while. I originally went to McGill in applied mathematics, and it didn't go super well. It was just, there was a lot of things going wrong at once, and it just was not working for me. So I took a break. And I was working, I did a bit of traveling, you know, as one does in their early 20s. And 2 years ago, there was the climate march on September 27th, which was one of the most important days of my life. And it really hit me hard. And I said to myself after that, that I was going to do more. That I, like, this is an issue that is incredibly important. And I need to, like, be acting on this. It was an amazing day. It was just a confluence of weird things happening, and you know, we went and got dumplings afterward, and I opened a fortune cookie that said, "You have the power to turn evils to angels." You know,
wow,
which is the most fortune cookie I've ever got.
Wait, what the really?
Yep, I keep it on my desk back there.
Never that profound.
That's amazing. My fortune cookies are never that deep. I never have epic calls to action. My fortune cookies are like, you have a clear mind. Like, my fortune cookies don't give me that level of insight.
Find the truth in yourself or whatever. Just like super vague. Like,
it was just this weird conflict. Like, we went and got dumplings and we went to Grumpy's to have some drinks after that.
Yes.
And I was just sitting there with my friends like, wow, this is amazing. Maybe I really do need to be, you know, doing more. I've always cared about these issues, but I felt powerless. Mm-hmm. Right. And I felt like I couldn't make a difference. But I resolved on that day and have kept that resolve that it's about putting your best effort into it, right? Like, this is a monumental thing to overcome, climate change. But what matters is that I'm doing my best. I'm trying really hard. You know, and I am going where I think I can be, you know, do the most good, really. Right. And so the day after that, I signed up with Robert Greene to work in NDG. I was partially because I'd heard he needed some help with volunteers, and I may always have voted Green, but it was mostly just like a passive thing. Like, oh, I'll vote for the Green Party because I like for them to have some support and would like them to grow as a party. This was the first time I became actively engaged in a political party. And then I reapplied to McGill in environmental sciences and started the January after that, the climate march.
So you have this call to action. You have this moment that you've identified as being pivotal and really having an aha moment in your life, right? And for you, what about the Green Party and what about environmental sciences made you feel like this is the best path? This is what I have to do to make this change that I feel is necessary.
So I think it at the beginning, it wasn't super well thought out, to be honest. It was some on the whim thinking, you know, it was the day after. I was like, you know what? It was this kind of moment that I've had a lot in my life where just spur of the moment, I decide to throw myself into a new project. Because, you know, I wasn't that passionate about what I was doing. I was working in a record store before that, which was interesting in its own right, but it was, you know, ultimately a retail job.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Like, and unless you own the record store, you're like, where does this mean? Right.
Like, yeah, you know, it's like, where am I going with this? I'm learning a lot about music, so that's great. Mm-hmm. You know, I can rant for a long time about music now, but ultimately... Well,
that's what the podcast is now. That's sorry, right. It's music. No.
I'm going to have to X out. I can't, yeah.
No, but just to I find it just really, really fascinating what you're saying about having that aha moment, because I find that's one of those things that a lot of people struggle and kind of look for, right? Like, I mean, if you said you're in your early 20s and that was 2 years ago, I'm quite a bit older than you because I'm like 2 years shy of 40. So like old man Keith, I guess, has I've always been sort of like aware, and we have like a very, I guess, kind of like green household. We use a ton of reusable things. We try to reduce our waste. We try to reduce our carbon footprint.
They have a
so
bidet.
On and so forth. We do to reduce toilet paper waste.
You know,
it's a cold water to bidet. Yeah.
Okay. I understand what you're going at, Keith, and I'm sorry to interrupt you.
But I go ahead.
Why don't bidets have like hair dryers for your butt? Like, why do you still need to use?
Well, that would not help the carbon footprint though, because that'd be electricity.
Oh. But how nice would it be though? Have we ever thought of this? Can we copyright this? Like, Sam's going to do great at the election, but I think the three of us could rig some real bank.
If the bidet's like, ooh, just yeah, underneath.
Just like a just gentle breath. Red. Like, imagine like if someone, like, imagine like if someone is just like a gentle whistle, just like, I think it would.
And it plays like a jaunty tune.
I know.
But yeah. But all that to say is that, like, I think to the point that you were saying earlier, Sam, though, is that, like, whatever we do at the residential level, still... the forces of climate change just seem so like cosmically bigger than us, you know, like despite all of the green initiatives that I do personally, I'm still like, I know I'm a drop in the bucket. You know,
well, this is something I think a lot of people feel, right? Where it's like the majority of these emissions are not done by like individuals, right? These are corporate emissions on a long time. And a lot of people really resent this, when you know, being judged for their footprint and such, because you know, they don't always have the financial freedom to, you know, like eat organic. It's more expensive.
Right. Yeah.
You know, mm-hmm. You know, I like, can I afford the electric car? Right.
No,
that's more expensive. Yeah. You know, how much is a Tesla at this point? It's that much more expensive, and so it's in a lot of ways.
And
people
you're
really resent
Exxon being like, you're trying to like, you buy reusable napkins and you look at Exxon and you're like, wait, what am I doing?
Yeah, there was a BP tweeted at somebody, or BP tweeted, yeah. I think in general, it was one of their business accounts. And I saw this as a screenshot, which I loved. BP tweeted like, oh, hey, what are you doing today? What pledge are you making to better the environment? And some guy's like, I'm not going to drop a billion liters of oils in the Gulf of Mexico. How about that? Like, you know, it's a weird feeling too, because again, you have all, don't use straws. Don't you dare use straws. But then again, you have these mega corporations just polluting every day. And again, like to Keith's point, you feel like a grain of sand on the beach.
And I think that's really unfortunate,
yeah.
Because much as I said that these, you know, these problems are larger scale and we should not be blaming the consumer for them, sustainability on a smaller scale does make a difference, right?
Mm-hmm.
And obviously the big problem to tackle is going to be these corporate emissions, right? The large scale, the massive amounts that are being done on that level. But once we have tackled that, we also want to tackle our day-to-day, you know.
Right.
These,
of course.
Like,
yeah.
Sustainability on an individual basis isn't worthless at all, right? Like,
it is
making
no,
a difference. But like you said, it feels so small compared to these.
For sure.
These
and that's
giants.
That's I guess what I'm trying to get at is you though felt, I guess, I mean, I don't know what level of sustainability you were living at pre-climate change March, but you said like environmental issues were always kind of like,
they were
at least close to
me.
Yeah. But this was then kicking it into another level to be like, I need to take action at a political level and like change the way we run our country, essentially, right? Like, I mean,
yes.
Like Canada is a monstrous exporter of goods and power in both oil and hydropower and just cutting down trees and exporting grain and so on and so forth. It's like we export our resources, which is just not great if you're not doing it in a sustainable way. So it's like we're in a very like interesting I find spots as a G8 country with this massive amount of exports to sort of like, if we could, be the like, the, set the path almost that others could potentially follow.
Yeah, and I think that we really do have that potential. You know, Canada is considered pretty favorably in a lot of the world, right? Like, mm-hmm. I mean, everybody's heard the stories of Canadian travelers and everyone's really nice to you because you're Canadian. I have plenty of those myself from my time going down to the States, where mm-hmm. I've been treated like super, super kindly by people I don't know just because they figure out I'm Canadian.
Right.
You know, and so Canada has a certain power in that way also to look at, to make these cultural shifts towards mm-hmm. cleaner alternatives. Mm-hmm. But I think I got slightly sidetracked when we were talking about when I first had the
That happens on the show, don't worry.
Yeah. It happens.
You're not the first, you won't be the last. Getting sidetracked is very on-brand.
We have actually a chalkboard where we're like, have we fucked up this guest's flow? And then we just have a bunch of checks going on. I think we're like 100%, our batting average is really high. We're like, we're doing really well.
Yeah.
We're not even talking about wrestling yet.
No,
so.
Zero.
All right. Well, I'll look forward to that.
It could happen at any time, sir.
So if we wanted to pull the train back on track then. So you mentioned, you talked about individual sustainability and you talked about the government needing for change. What are the main tenets of the Green Party system or the Green Party platform that you found attractive and that you felt the need to push and grow into Canadian politics?
So the Green Party platform was actually just released today. Hooray. Oh. And then on Friday, the Quebec wing is releasing their own version of the platform, particular to
so
Quebec.
So this, when this comes out, this will be a little bit before the election. This will come out on, I think, September 16th, I want to say. So both of them, I guess, will be available on the websites, right?
Oh, the Green Party platform came out today.
Yeah, but the Quebec version.
Oh, the Quebec one is on Friday.
Yeah, exactly. That's it. But this comes out on next week.
Oh, this podcast.
Podcast world,
I thought you meant the...
This is already out. You don't need to wait. So this is going to come out next Thursday.
Okay, wonderful.
So it's already out. So you can go to the Green Party what's the website? It's
greenparty.ca.
Is there... And the Quebec website, Lawrence?
Oh, I don't know.
There isn't?
There's not a Quebec version of the website, I do not believe. Although, you can visit my website at samfairbrother.ca.
Oh. I guess you go plug yourself.
Some of the things that are...
I love it. So,
personally important. Sorry?
Right. I will
finish answering your question. I promise.
Go for it.
Yeah, so the climate plan has a lot of pieces to it. And a lot of them, I think, are relevant to Montrealers. Mm-hmm. We've seen recently in the United States a massive transport revamp. You know, this gargantuan bill that looks at like completely redoing a lot of transportation in the United States, particularly looking at trains. Mm-hmm. And that's a big thing in the Green Party platform that Canada's really, really bad at, if we're going to be honest. Like, mm-hmm. Canadian trains are... One of my friends was telling me that Joe Biden has more planned, new train plans for Canada than Trudeau does.
Yeah, about commuter trains here, right? Like I was like,
yeah,
it's because they've been like getting reduced and reduced and reduced.
As like intercity trains, mm-hmm. and also where we've been looking at a lot of trains to more rural areas to give mm-hmm. those people more accessibility to the city. Mm-hmm. And a lot of the important things, you know, available to them in that kind of sense. So there a big Canada really needs to match the United States right now, I think, in that kind of massive transport overhaul, looking at how we can continue to push our public transit and make that cleaner and cleaner, as well as looking to do a lot of intercity kind of things, commuter trains.
Like they've been talking about it for what feels like years. Some of our listeners know, like the carbon footprint of air travel is insanity.
It is. Right. Absolutely.
Right? And then when you hear those commercials for airlines being like flights between Montreal, Toronto, every hour on the hour. And you're like, but why? And you're like, when the flight is under an hour, but like there is like you know, high speed train technology that would take you like an hour and a half, 2 hours, yeah. You know? Yeah. So it's like, hey.
And with all the plane hassle.
Exactly. That's it. Like trains are like remarkably green form of travel. Cause like once you get up to speed, you can just stay at speed and so on and so forth. And you don't need to take the tremendous amount of power to like get it into the sky and keep it yeah. there. You know,
like, I mean, the plane is an amazing invention, really. Every time I get into a plane, which isn't actually very often, I'm always just, it is amazing that these things can stay up there, you know.
It's very, very cool, but
and I mean, I know how it works, you know, I've looked into this and like, yeah. I still am just like, I can't believe it when I see it.
Yeah, you're like, take a look at a building. Now imagine just it being in the sky. Like, that's what a plane is doing all the time. But yeah. But in terms of, like I said, the carbon footprint, when you consider it, and then you consider that Montreal-Toronto is a flat, straight line, and you're like, and there's even rail tracks already running there that I guess like the land could be used, so on and so forth. There's a bunch of things that, you know, could happen there, even if you didn't have to lay new tracks. And then it's just like, it's something that I believe, like I firmly believed when I was in high school, there would be a high speed train connecting Montreal to Toronto. And that was so like obvious. 1996, you know, like.
And that whole triangle, which people often extend, like Toronto, Ottawa, and then to Quebec City, right? And Montreal fits nicely into it. There's really is no reason for us not to have these extremely heavily trafficked like lanes serviced by a high-speed train.
Mentioning it, that they were saying that I think like one of the proposed high-speed trains had the Montreal-Toronto line in under an hour and a half, right? That was one of the high-speed train propositions. And then someone had the hilarious comment of they were like, "That's less than the normal Toronto commute." So they were like, living in Montreal and working in Toronto, it would be the same as like living in like what's like one of those like outlier cities that people commute to, like Hamilton,
Dundas,
yeah, like Dundas or whatever else, like, you know, Oakville. Like where you're like Oakville, yeah, exactly. Oakville's an hour and a half out of town, you know, like in through traffic. So you're like, yeah, living in Montreal and then taking a high speed train to Toronto to get to work would be comparable to a normal Toronto commute,
which is like. Is hilarious.
and like I said, just completely mind-boggling.
It is
that we don't have that. This is like 2021.
Even in like a touristic sense, you know, like being able to go out for the evening and eat in the other city and then reasonably be able to get home, you know.
Yeah.
Or you know, I want to go watch the Habs play Toronto in Toronto.
Oh, plug in Habs. Especially, like I said, thinking about high-speed trains is that, like, I was in Taiwan a couple of years ago, and, like, Taiwan has, like, a 600-kilometer-an-hour bullet train. And, like, Taiwan is not an incredibly wealthy country. Like, it's a well-established economy, sure.
Yeah, they are.
But they're not at the G8 table, and Canada is, and, like, they can't get their two major cities connected, you know? Like,
no, you know, it's... Like, and I mean, I think this is especially relevant to NDG Westmount as Mr. Garneau is transport minister. So, you know, what have you been doing, Mr. Garneau, with your mandate? Just a quick little poke there.
Yeah,
but I mean, I'm
tossing jabs.
But I mean, I'm happy that you brought that up because Mark Garneau, you know, is in your riding. He's in the incumbent, hasn't lost in a long time. You know, he is the transport minister. When you're going into an election and you know this is his riding and you want to make a splash, what does success look like for the Green Party? What are the goals? What do you want to be able to do in this election that maybe you guys haven't done in previous elections?
So our goal is to win, quite simply, you know, and that's, you know, very obvious. But, and a lot of people say, oh, how are you ever going to beat the Liberals? Well, we just need enough people to decide that it's not throwing away their vote to go green,
right.
That the Green Party has the platform that best represents them, and that the candidate is, you know, really cares about these issues and is there for the community, right? Mm-hmm. You just need a lot of things to go right. And yes, it's a lot of things going right at once, you know, and they may not all go our way. But I think we're running a really good, strong campaign. Mm-hmm. And this will go back to, or this comes back to the my story. The biggest thing for me is door-to-door canvassing.
Okay.
This is in a lot of reasons why I'm here. So I signed up with Robert Greene, and I did door-to-door canvassing most days of the week with him. I may have taken a day or two off, but I was doing it at least 4 or 5 days a week for October, the October. And I just found it extremely rewarding. I loved it. I loved talking with people at the door about the issues. I thought it was just getting to know my community, having these conversations. You know, there were a couple people who were skeptical about climate change that I was able to have that discussion with them. And you know, like, no, these are very real. This is a very real problem, and you really should be, you know, keeping this in mind. You know, and having that kind, those conversations was just. It was amazing for me. This is
why you're built for politics, Sam, because if someone's like, I don't know about climate change, I would just be yelling at them. I'd be yelling at them at their house, at their door, and then they'd be like, I'm not voting for that guy. Well, that guy came to my house and yelled at me about flooding.
Yeah, I'm not like, voting. Vote Heisterman if you want to get verbally abused in your vestibule.
Yeah, exactly. If you want to see someone get really angry at you when you have questions about climate change. Yeah.
Well,
clearly you're built for it. If you can have those meaningful conversations without just immediately flying off the handle, because sure. I would personally.
I guess the way I've always seen it, and perhaps this is naive of me, is that when people are skeptical about climate change, when people have, you know, some beliefs that I really think should be changed. You know, I generally, you know, my goal isn't to change everyone's beliefs, but I think there are some things that are very important to get across. There's a reason these people think this way, and often it's misinformation. Mm-hmm. You know, often
like something convinced them of like a falsehood, right? Yeah. Like when you mention beliefs, right? Like I'm like, climate change is not like, do you believe in leprechauns? You know, like, it's not like it's, no, you know what I mean? Like, that's, yeah,
but it is framed. The,
yeah, there
to
has
some
been a misinformation.
Way, right?
Something science, has convinced them otherwise.
Science can be very confusing. I'm the first person to admit that, and I'm studying it, you know. Mm-hmm. A lot of these things are just not easy to understand at a lower level. Yeah. And I think that's a problem that I think quite a few scientists have is bringing it to a level that's easy to understand for the average person, right? Because often in science, you're researching your specification and it's just beyond what anyone can understand, you know?
Yeah.
It doesn't mean it's invalid. It's just, it needs that kind of like translation into simpler terms, right?
Right.
Is there,
and it's one of those things that, sorry, just like what, like I have this conversation a lot with, I find at least climate change to me has become easier. I work with a lot of people who are in their like 50s and stuff. So there are like some climate change, like they're like, the weather changes. That's normal. And I was like, remember the 90s when there was always snow in December, like always. And now it's been like 10 years where there isn't snow. And I'm like, that's you can observe that. There's a lot of other things going on, but I'm like, but you can observe that. I'm like, winter is different now. And I'm like, I'm not that old. And winter from like my childhood to now,
I mean,
is like
same, you know,
demonstrably like, different.
You know, it is. I remember there were some people, some new friends I made who had moved to Montreal, and I was telling them about like some of Montreal's like patterns, although Montreal is always unpredictable in its weather.
Yeah, yeah.
But I'm like, you know, like talking about like when it snows, and I'm like, I'm just wrong now, aren't I?
Yeah.
Like all of these things that I thought were like, you know, the common knowledge, you know, this is what Montreal winters are like. It's just wrong.
We typically in the last, like literally in the last decade, don't have any significant snowstorms until January. Whereas like I remember in childhood, there'd be like snow cover in November.
Yeah.
You know, like that was like, I'm just like, that's now a different thing. And I can only imagine if you're 50 and like 15, 20 years older than me, it must be even crazier. And I'm like, just think about that. And I'm like, that's, I think that's one of the very like good, like rebrands that environmentalists have done, is like to move away from global warming and just say climate change. Right. Cause it's like global warming, I think not everybody could get their head around. They're like, it's not warmer whatever.
You're going to have there's invariably one asshole who is going to go out in -40 weather and goes, how can there be global warming if it's cold? Yeah. Right now,
exactly. I mean, you know,
how is it not warm, Mr. Global Warming? And you have to go.
If I had a long time to sit with this person and they were open-minded, I could explain
But you're asking for two
melting
things.
Of the.
You're asking for two things. I don't think you're going to get right. Like you very eloquently said that the science is not accessible in some cases. How do you balance trying to give people this knowledge and also have it be accessible for people like me who aren't science folks?
I'll be honest, I think I'm very good at explaining science in simpler terms.
Okay.
So like, I could describe a climate change process right now if you'd like. Have you heard of Earth's albedo?
No. Earth's libido?
You know what? My brain went there, but I didn't want
to
let it.
Like when Mother Nature and Father Time put the kids to bed and they're like making eye contact. They're like, look,
there's a new planet.
Exactly.
So this is one of a very important what's called a positive feedback loop, which is something that gets worse and worse. It feeds itself, basically. So the Earth's albedo means how dark is the Earth. So this is an intuitive way to think about it is if you're wearing a white shirt or a black shirt, you're much hotter in the black shirt in the sun.
Right.
Because black absorbs much more energy and white reflects much more energy.
Right.
It's we all know this from, you know, like what we pick to wear, you know, when we go outside, right?
Right.
Now, what is the lightest thing on planet Earth as a surface? It's the ice caps. You know, the ice caps are extremely, extremely, you know, white and reflective.
Yeah.
They reflect a huge amount of solar radiation away and therefore heat away from the Earth. What's something that's very dark? The oceans. You know, you look at the oceans on, you know, like on a map of the globe, and the oceans are very dark. And so when the ice caps melt, Earth is reflecting less and less heat away due to its albedo.
So basically, so there's more, that's why the oceans are getting hotter at a way faster level, is because there's more dark ocean than light ice cap.
Yes. So this is one of the reasons that global warming is happening in this way, is that the less ice caps we have, the less they have the ability to reflect the sun's heat away
from
the Earth.
Can we just refreeze them, though? Let's just refreeze them.
It's hard to refreeze them when global temperatures are rising for other reasons as well.
Oh, like greenhouse gas emissions and all refreezing that. Like if it was just that, maybe.
Refreezing is... We don't have a great process of doing that right now. So this is one of, like I said, I think one of the big things. And then one of the reasons that it doesn't always get warmer places is that Earth's currents in the oceans function largely to redistribute heat around the globe. Right. So the currents move heat away from the equator towards more northern latitudes is height and longitudes is width. I think
that's right. I mix those two up constantly. So
these currents that distribute heat around the globe more evenly are being disrupted really heavily by the melting of the ice caps because the salinity level of water is changing.
Right.
Because there isn't salt in the ice caps, there is in the ocean. So as the ice caps melt, they became less salty, and these processes, which it's called a thermohaling current, that bring heat away from the equator are weaker and weaker. So in some regions, we are going to see cooling because less heat is being moved away from the equator.
Right.
So I get all of that. And now I'm just to bring it back, I guess, to the Green Party and politics. There's like, and I don't want it to be like ultra like scary and fear mongering or whatever, but it's like every single, I guess, like election cycle year leader that doesn't like hit the brakes on whatever our current like energy and climate and so on policies are that we go by, we're like, we're losing time, right? Like not to be like ultra doomsday about it. But like that we hear in the news and stuff that you're like, every couple years, it seems, we've passed like yet another point of no return. Like there's this point of no return that we passed it. There's another point of no return. Oh, we passed it. So it's like how do you balance, I guess, your day-to-day experiences and I guess like political activism and going door to door without, I guess, like just like panicking and screaming in fear that that you're like, oh, if we don't get it this time, we're going to pass another point of no return. Like, you know what I mean? Like that's
so I have two answers for that question. I really mm-hmm. like the question. Well, the first is that the climate change, there are these like markers of like points of no return, but ultimately our actions are still going to be mitigating the problem. Climate change is here. We can't stop climate change. You know, like it's arrived.
Mm-hmm.
But how severe it is, we can control. There's even if, you know, mm-hmm. this election the Greens don't win massively and are able to, you know, really change what Canada's doing. And even then, Canada is only one country in the world. You know, it's hard. But ultimately, what we do and how we change the way our society works, even if it is slowly, will make a difference to a lot of people. Mm-hmm. You know, if we may not reach the targets that we, like, the most, you know, the targets we need to, but even not quite reaching those, it'll let us recover better from there, perhaps. And so this comes into the second point, which is that we need to achieve basically net zero emissions in a lot of ways. Mm-hmm. But also, there is potentially technology to reverse some of these effects.
Mm-hmm.
And we need to continue to invest into this so that it becomes, you know, actually usable, because right now it's a lot of it's in its theoretical states.
Yeah.
But all of the sustainability in the world isn't going to remove carbon from the atmosphere.
Right.
We're already at a level of carbon in the atmosphere that's far too high, and that level is going to be added to considerably before we actually get to net zero emissions. And at that point, what do we do? Well, there is a technology called carbon sequestration technology, which mm-hmm. draws carbon from the atmosphere into and out of it. Right mm-hmm. now, it is not good enough to, like,
do it at a wide scale. Yeah.
But it could potentially do that. And once we've achieved low emissions or zero emissions and sustainability, then this kind of technology can help bring us back. You know, we have gone past a certain point, and it is going to be very difficult. Mm-hmm. And a lot of these erratic weather patterns, heat waves, droughts, fires, we're going to see these, but it's not, you know, the Earth is not doomed.
Yeah, I read an interesting article where they were talking about, like, and again, I don't, it's not to say, like, it'll be fine, but they were just saying, like, the one thing that I guess scientists don't know is what the turnaround looks like, right? Because, like, some people point a lot to the hole in the ozone layer and how quickly that repaired itself. They were like, we know it's different, but we're like, and we know that we're maybe not going to get back to where we were, but they were like, we don't know what the real, because it's never happened before that we have had the turnaround.
No.
So they were like, that's the one, I guess, not to say silver lining, but they were like, what, like, to your point, I think, is that, like, we still, like, everything does help, and it is going to make it, whatever it does look like, we don't know exactly what it's going to look like because we haven't course corrected yet. So, like, that's, like, the one unknown factor is that we're like, there's a possibility, at least, that there is a way out.
And
maybe not just the way things were, but some way out.
I just think about in a longer period of time, you know, like way down the line when these problems are getting fixed, and how much our little decisions now will matter then.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, our decisions as to what we do to be more green right now might make the difference between it being 80 to 100 years until we're more stable, or 2 to 300 years before
exactly.
we're stable. Like, if we can really cut down heavily and properly invest into our green technology now, then we can really, really lower the amount of time it takes to hit that recovery point and back to, you know, a healthier planet, which we really just don't have right now. It's very obvious. I guess, you know,
something I also wanted to ask about is, I mean, obviously the Green Party are the champions for the environmental issues. Yeah. I think that the current administration has a lot of warranted criticism against it for maybe not taking the environmental issues as seriously. There's a lot of lip service, so on and so forth.
Yes.
Like, is that something that you can comment on, where it's like, what are the maybe, I guess, like misinformation of people who are just being like, well, Justin Trudeau's doing enough for the environment, or like, you know, like he's done enough. You know what I mean? Like, I think because they play into it, right? Like they do say that they're like, we're making a greener, healthier Canada, what yeah. have you.
I mean, it, so, I guess the part that's a bit hard is, you know, it's kind of the Liberal Party, what they promise isn't what they, you know, what they actually do, first of all.
No.
So their green promises are better than what they actually put into place as legislation. Mm-hmm. But secondarily, even their promises aren't good enough and aren't mm-hmm. actually in line with the Paris Accords. Mm-hmm. They're rather tepid. The difficulty comes when we say, oh, it's not enough. They say, oh, it is. You know, it's like who to believe? Well, the Green Party has the science behind it. You know, there have been a lot. There's been so much research done into these things, you know, like mm-hmm. there have been these gargantuan studies looking at the effects of climate change. And if the Liberal Party says that this is enough, it's absurd, really. It's mm-hmm. absurd for them to be able to claim that they're like doing their part when it's absolutely inadequate. You know, like mm-hmm. this is the number one issue. And, you know, there's been other issues that I think have been super relevant to this campaign, like housing. You know, this is really important to talk about, mm-hmm. like, you know, sustainable, you know, like food and that kind of thing, looking into those kinds of things, indigenous sovereignty. There's a lot of important issues, but the climate, because it is this just such a gargantuan problem, it's like this has to be first and foremost.
There's the trickle down effect into all the other issues to be like, you know, like housing and even just like affordable housing and so on and so forth. Like climate disasters really throw a wrench into that plan, you know, like it's just like yeah. if there's suddenly like rapid fire floods, flash floods happening all over the place, your affordable housing takes a hit and now you're at ground zero and you need to rebuild buildings that should not have been destroyed in a flash flood, you know, like there's yeah. there's all of these
and different I always
elements, you know.
I get frustrated when people are like, oh, you're the Green Party, you should just focus on the climate. It's like, no, all these issues all tie together, you know, in a big web, you know, like.
And I mean, I think that's I guess, like having read, I haven't read this year's platform, but having read previous Green Party platform statements, that I don't know if maybe in past history they were not as well won out, but I read when Robert was running, for instance, I read the platform that they were talking about, and I think that's, you touch on an interesting point to be like, fixing the issue is an 80 to 100 to 200 year kind of problem. And subsequently, we need to take all of those environmental issues in mind. But then you still need to worry about education and housing people and like distribution of wealth and all of that, because most of us are not going to be around to see if we succeed or not. We're going to have the rest of our lives and our bills to pay next year and all of that. So it does have to, I think, be both. You know, like you can't just say like, just like forget everything, we're only doing the environment. Everyone's going to be like, I don't have a job right now and I need some relief money, please.
how do you consolidate? Because obviously I'm looking at your platform now and you guys have a section about agriculture, food, fisheries, rural revitalization, municipal affair, transports. These are, you guys can't just be a one issue party, because if your goal is to uproot, like, and you're writing the Liberal Party, right? What kind of things can the, because you mentioned like we want to win, right? And I think in the Canadian political landscape, where you have a lot of left-leaning parties or more liberal-based parties, with the Green Party as yourself, you have the NDP, you have the Liberal Party, and then on the other end of
Quebec, you even have the Bloc, which is
Quebec,
also
you have the Bloc, which Quebec, is yeah socially more closer to the left and everything like that. And then mm-hmm. you know, how do you combat kind of this fear that if people don't, at least when I was growing up, the narrative for me before I studied politics was that if you don't vote for the Liberals, the Conservatives are going to sneak in and fuck up your shit.
Well, at least in NDG, the answer to that question is easy. Mm-hmm. NDG, the Conservatives don't have a...
For sure.
You know, they don't have a chance.
Yeah.
So for me personally, it's that the conservatives have never gotten enough of a vote share to win in any circumstance. You know, you would have to have five parties splitting the vote other than the conservatives for them to even be close. And I don't think they could even do it then. Let me check my math. I don't know. You need six other parties, and you'd need them to all split really evenly.
But what about
then? I used to live in NDG, and if I'm not mistaken, the conservatives got like under 5%.
I understand. I live in Ville Saint Laurent, where the liberals have not lost since 1980. I understand, right?
So and it was. I think it was in that Dion sense,
and it was what's his name, Dion, and then it was Lambropoulos, and these people haven't lost. But as if we pulled the lookout further than NDG Westmount, which is your riding, and you guys say we want to win or we want to do this, you want to top the 1.18 million votes you guys got last time. What needs to change, or what needs to be pushed in a direction to make you guys a contender, essentially?
Well, I guess just to follow up on that, and I think because I do want to get this in as a talking point before we end, is that there has been a change in leadership and stuff for the Green Party. So you guys are headed in, obviously the environmental issues there, but you are headed in a new direction. It is new leadership and stuff. So just to expand on what Lawrence was saying.
And I think the Green Party has really expanded their platform in the last, in 2019 as well as in 2021. Like you said, the platform has become far more all-encompassing of Canadian issues. And I think as more and more people realize what the Green Party is proposing, the Green Party will gain in strength again and again. It is more difficult in some ridings where that kind of vote splitting is more of a risk, I will admit. If I were in a riding where the conservatives and the liberals were neck and neck, it would be a much harder decision because I am not a fan of the Liberal Party, but I certainly don't want the conservatives to win.
Well, exactly. Like I know we're talking about Quebec, but like the left vote split is what ultimately landed the Harper government into a position of power in Ontario, right? Fortunately, though, I guess for listeners, most of our listeners are in Quebec, that didn't get the conservatives more seats in Quebec, as you were saying. That was really an Ontario situation.
They try their pushes at Quebec sometimes, but I just don't think that it's going to stick here ever, to be honest. I just don't think watch me get proven wrong, but I don't think it appeals to Quebecers very much, just because the party is extremely Anglophone.
I can't imagine the Conservatives landing many, if any, seats just in any year. Who knows?
Further on that point about vote splitting, though, is that Justin Trudeau in 2015 promised election reform.
Oh yeah, I remember that kind of web survey that I did that kind of didn't answer any questions. Then he was like, "See, you don't want it," and I was like, "What?"
Yeah,
That was his vote, representational voting platform, was a confusing internet survey that resulted in nothing. And he said it proved his point.
I wouldn't say I believe in no direct representation, because I think it can be really important to have candidates that are connected to their communities, And I think the Green Party is really good at, in some ways, fielding candidates who are very close with their community. You know, I've lived in NDG since I was 2 years old. My entire life, right? I know this riding incredibly well. I love this riding, and I'm able to be very connected to the community. So some kind of representation in that sense is good, but a degree of proportional representation, it's not going to be a simple process, or perhaps even a ranked choice voting might be something to consider, which I did for the Green Party leadership campaign, and I have to say it's wonderful. Only gives the voter more freedom.
I think there's no downside about North America. The recent, I want to say, New York mayoral or gubernatorial, one of the New York state, either New York State or New York City elections, was a ranked voting.
The state of Maine has implemented ranked choice voting for all levels. And I mean, it just gives the voter more freedom. It does, force you to learn more about politics, but honestly, people probably should, if our democracy is going to function. I know it's exhausting and it's difficult, but that's honestly what these structures want. They want you to be exasperated, and they want you to think, oh, it's too complicated to look into all of this. But if our democracy is going to continue and function in a healthy way, I think ranked choice is really important, and get it, you know, it forces people to think more, it forces people to do more research. This is another point, just in terms of like the strength of our democracy, I'm becoming increasingly concerned with the amount of promises our political parties are making that are really not being delivered upon. The Liberal Party in 2015 promised so much. I was excited about a lot of what they were promising, you know, and I wasn't ever a liberal supporter, but a lot of what they were saying was exciting. And
we electoral reform, like just this, like almost like single-handedly, if electoral reform had happened in a meaningful way, that would have changed Canadian democracy, like forever. For the better, forever. you know, like in a positive way. And it was just sort of like, how many people who were maybe on the fence about Green, on the fence about NDP, whatever they might have been, like, were like, you know what, we can give the Liberals their majority this time because they're going to deliver electoral reform.
And it's like, no, Canada. Canada has some amazing protections of our democratic system. The mm-hmm. donation limit is amazing. It completely stops people from having these, you know, like super, like massive donors. It's mm-hmm. a fantastic yeah, exactly, thing. Like, the short election period and the heavy restrictions on your, like, what you, how you can advertise. It's wonderful. These are systems that really keep our democracy clean in a lot of ways. And mm-hmm. I think, you know, ranked choice would be a massive step towards just keeping our democracy robust.
Like it's one of those things where it's like, and I think it's always been the issue. We don't have too much more time before we transition over to five questions, but I think it's always been the issue of the like first past the post writing system is you never really get the impression that you're really representing the voter. And I mean, like we referenced it, the conservative majority, right? Where it was like, there were ridings in Ontario where with 30% of the popular vote, they got the seat and then got a majority government based on it. So as soon as you're looking at that as the voter, as the little guy with my one vote, you're like, wait a second, this doesn't make any sense and it's not representing people. You know?
That is actually the exact reason why Maine switched to ranked choice. There was an election in which the Republican won with 34 or 33%, because the other two split very nicely at 32 and 32. Yeah. And people were like, okay, we can't have this happen again. You know, like this is, and I love that Canada has more than two parties. I think it's wonderful, but sometimes it doesn't feel like you have the freedom to vote even with that. Right.
And yeah, I think, exactly. And especially, like I said, when the outcome could literally be 70% of the population, I could only imagine the frustration. I was furious that the Conservatives got a majority anyway, but I could only imagine like the fury of living in one of those ridings where you're like 70. So like me and my neighbors and everyone, 70% of the people around me at least voted left leaning in some degree, because it was Green, NDP, and Liberal is where 70% of us lean, and the Conservatives were on the complete opposite end of that spectrum, and somehow they were like, we got the seat, we're going to Ottawa, and you're like, what is going on? Like, this is not what we wanted.
It's so frustrating to see that kind of thing happen, but like I said, ranked choice is wonderful. And also, I don't know, accountability in Canadian politics right now, I think, is one of the reasons the Green Party is so important, is we need people to call the Liberals out. We need to pressure the Liberals for their lack of action on a lot of these issues. Every Green vote is a voice saying you're not doing enough. You know, every Green vote is saying, you know, even if the Greens don't win, if they get a strong showing, the Liberal Party has to look at that and say, all right, what are we not doing? You know, why are we losing these voters to the Green Party? So I think a Green vote is never a wasted one, because it does put that pressure on the Liberal Party to actually act.
I mean, if only in the most, like, even with the most sinister intentions, right? Like where you're like, if a green representative, say, comes close to beating a Liberal candidate, the Liberal candidate then needs to be like, well, I need to be more green next time to make sure I don't lose next time. Like, so exactly. It's like, even with like a sinister power hungry intention, every green vote still will like force them to put green, like environmental issues into their platforms just so that they can win next time.
Yeah. That was the most mind boggling thing about like climate politics are the people who are like, ah, I don't know if I believe climate change. What's the worst case scenario? Like, you clean up the air and the water. Like, what's the worst case scenario there? Ah, fuck. We spent all this time cleaning up the air and water and our food. What a bunch of idiots we are. Like, I never understood that logic.
Or, I mean, and just in regards of, like, investing in green technology instead of the oil industry, let's pretend that they're, well, let's ignore emissions for a moment. A lot of think tanks are not investing in oil anymore because its days are numbered.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
From a purely financial perspective, it's a finite resource
that we're running out of.
It's becoming less and less popular. Also, the tar sands are a terrible way to extract oil. Even if you like oil, it's incredibly wasteful and extremely low like yield. And if it wasn't subsidized, it would be completely not financially viable. But even apart from that, like, people aren't investing in oil in the same way they have because the end is in sight for a lot of. So just from a financial perspective, shouldn't we get ahead of the curve and start investing in these new technologies? Yeah. You know, change our oil refineries into production of solar, into production of wind power. You know, let's look more into geothermal.
You might know this more than I do, Sam, because I remember hearing or reading about like. There was a massive like green industry summit, I want to say in the last week or two. And it's like the list of companies there would kind of like shock you in terms of like, because at this point, like you said, they're just interested in money and they're not seeing money in oil the same way. And they got to the table for the most shitty reasons imaginable. They're at the table right now.
I don't believe for a second these companies are doing something altruistic because they give a shit about the environment. I think they're seeing in the future their bottom line being affected. And they're like, it's time to get ahead of this before.
Yeah. And I mean, look, the economy is always on people's minds, right? Mm-hmm. We live in these capitalist structures that mean that we need capital to, you know, live.
Yeah.
So I think it just from that like point of reason, I think it's a very powerful angle to take, which is just that this is a financially responsible decision, these transitions. Mm-hmm.
It's just like, it's like someone was like talking about like, you know, like I worked in the, like, so there was like a joke or whatever where I was like my grandfather worked in the coal mine and like my father worked there and I worked there, and my son's gonna work there. And you're like, you know, the mine is not gonna last for like, eventually there won't be a mine anymore. So like, what are you talking about that you think that your son is gonna work? Like, you're mining things out of the earth. Eventually it'll stop being there.
humans are almost like hardwired to resist change, though it'd be very difficult, right? And I think there's some biological reasoning behind that, because things being different, you know, we don't like that because it's unexpected. It's, you know, it's, we can't predict it as well, so it's dangerous to us from a, like a biological perspective. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure all the science on that one. But it does intuitively make sense, right?
Yeah.
So people do resist change and sometimes it's like I said, it's hard to blame these people for their resisting of these new ideas, right? Mm-hmm. What's new can be scary, you know. It's the unknown, and we do fear the unknown. Mm-hmm. But getting people to embrace this change, I think, is really important, and becoming more open to the, you know, the idea that the world is changing. You know, and mm-hmm. we need to adapt as humans, you know, and it's good for us to, you know, it's a good thing for us to shift what we talk about in politics, right? Mm-hmm. A simple example is how like gay marriage was, this is more in the States than in Canada, mm-hmm. but gay marriage was a, you know, large argument for a while. And the conversation has shifted over to trans rights in a lot mm-hmm. of ways, right? As one of the main focuses. Mm-hmm. And I think that's wonderful. Right, it's that we accomplish something, and then we are looking to accomplish more. Right?
Yeah.
We want to protect more groups of people. We want to give greater equality. We want to be more sustainable.
Yeah, it's one of those things. I again, just reading this thing where it's like you have the right wing guy to being like, what? So it's going to be like equal rights for like everyone? And you're like, yeah, kinda. That's pretty much the goal.
Yeah,
like we'll go one group at a time and work our way down the list, and then when we get there, that's a good thing. Like it's there's no mission accomplished until we all have equal rights. That's actually the goal of going down the list now.
In some ways, like. I don't mean this in every realm, but we will always need to be pushing for change, you know, and unless we achieve absolute utopia, which I don't believe is really possible.
Star Trek says otherwise. We're gonna do it. Sorry. We're gonna reach the stars, and we're gonna become the utopian society.
At the very least, you know, it's a pretty darn long way away, so. So, you know, like, I think it's good for people to increasingly get into this kind of mindset of
I do agree. Like, it's very funny to me. And I think just like how much sort of speculative fiction, I think that like Star Trek is one of the like only ones where we like land right. Like, if you look most of the time, it's like post-apocalyptic or like a complete dystopia, or like most of our speculative like future fiction rarely is like, and then the humans got it all right and sorted their shit out. Like, that is so rarely the plot of science fiction.
I think we're probably near the end of this, and
yeah.
So one of my favorite science fiction novels is Kurt Vonnegut's Player Piano.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if either of you've read it.
I've read quite a bit of Vonnegut, but that one is not ringing a bell.
It's his first.
Oh,
and it's not quite as entrenched in his style as some of that. You see, it's always fun reading, you know, or watching the movies of the early films of a director, or watching reading an early book. But it's about a sort of utopia where everybody is cared for by the state, but most people don't have jobs because everything has been automated. Mm-hmm. And the main jobs are just engineers, whose job it is to make sure that all the automation, you know, stays working.
Which is like a genuine fear of a lot of people, like right now.
And people in the book are really, really unhappy, you know, like because they don't have anything to do. You know, it's not enough to just be cared for. Some purpose is required as well. I really recommend the book. It's got Vonnegut's wit, and it's very good. But yeah, it's like I said, I think we will just need to push for a very long time to make things better and better, you know.
Yeah,
absolutely.
And we really need to be open to that.
So, Sam,
Lawrence, ready for five questions?
Yeah, maybe? I was just about to say, Sam, you were right on the money. We are coming to a close. One of the Go Plug Yourself traditions is we always ask a final five questions of our guest of the week. The fifth question is we're going to ask you to come up with a question for our next guest, and you don't know who they are. Last podcast, we asked someone who didn't know you were coming on to ask a question of you. So we're going to run through these five questions. Question number one, what do your thoughts sound like?
These questions are wild, Sam. Just a fair
one. It varies a lot. There's a lot of people up there,
uh-huh,
and they have different voices based on what it is, you know.
Oh, so you have like internal dialogue, like you'll speak with yourself.
Yeah.
It's not just a monologue, like, there's a dialogue.
No, full conversations, and there's different people talking up there who have different sides, I guess.
Oh.
I hope that doesn't sound too crazy.
No. I think that's a first though.
No,
I think that's the first point. A lot of people said like monologue. Go ahead, Lawrence.
Oh, no, I was going to say, I'm not sure if it's the first. I think maybe one of the people from the Far Festival had a similar answer.
Maybe.
Leah, I think. Possibly. I don't know.
Okay. Interesting. Question number two. What was your favorite thing to eat as a child? Could be a meal, could be a snack. So it's like, it could be a candy, could be just like the favorite like thing as a kid.
Peanut butter sandwiches. I was a very picky eater. And I would always be plied with a peanut butter sandwich whenever I didn't want whatever it was that was being served.
So now, yeah, exactly. Crunchy, smooth, and bread type are my follow-ups.
Smooth and white bread, you know, very
like a classic. Wonder Bread, like the chewy white bread, like nice.
it is the classic peanut butter sandwich.
Mm-hmm. Did you eat further question. Did crusts, no crusts, crust
crusts? Crust, yeah, crusts again.
Okay, so you weren't that picky.
I was picky.
Because I think that's like the epitome of picky. If you're like, I will only eat this peanut butter sandwich on this white bread, creamy peanut butter with the crusts cut off. Like, I feel any kid that like cut the crusts off, I was like, that's picky. Like, I remember, I think it was like one of my friends or whatever, like my mom just made us sandwiches and he was like, can you cut the crusts off? And my mom was like, what are you talking about? like, what are you saying? This is bread. Like, why are you removing part of it? Yeah. And then like, I think the denouement of that story was the kid just like ate around the crust and just left the crusts behind.
For sure.
My mom was like, there is no way I'm cutting crusts off of your sandwich. Why are we here? Like, I just made you a sandwich. Like, yeah. I think that's the pickiest. Any kid that demands to have like crusts cut off their sandwich.
No, not that bad, but I was pretty picky. Not these days, not at all. But
question number three: what is the best or worst thing about growing up?
I guess I think this is actually best and worst. Is well, the responsibility of it, you know, it's terrifying and slightly crushing, but also, you know, I sometimes forget this, but I'm an adult and I can make decisions, you know. Yeah, I'm not reliant on other people this has been funny in the campaign since I before that worked for people on campaigns, and there have been moments on the campaign where I'm like, all right, now who do I ask permission to do this?
No, you're the guy now.
It's like, well, yeah, that's me. Yeah. Well, what should I do for this? Oh, yeah, I decide that. And it's, you know, it's scary, but also it's wonderful. You know,
yeah, like the same thing that gives you that like crushing, yeah, exactly. Like I was going to say, the same like crushing amount of responsibility that can be overwhelming is still like an amount of agency that you don't have as a kid where you're like, I decide at what's going to happen now.
I guess, yeah, like the freedom is would be a similar answer to that, right? The freedom that comes with being an adult too, where you have to make these decisions, but you know, I wouldn't have it any other way. I love, I would consider myself pretty, you know, individualistic in some ways, you know, in personal freedoms and all that.
Mm-hmm. Very interesting. Question number four comes to us from Jonathan Bouchard, also known as Jubby, who is on CBC's television reality show that I believe is airing now, called Race Against the Tide, which is a show that is fascinating in general. It's professional sand sculptors that have to perform like these massive sand sculptures in the Bay of Fundy before the like 10, 15 foot Bay of Fundy tides like hit and just like take them out.
Oh, that's so cute. I love it.
Which is amazing. And even he was saying, he was like, he hadn't seen all of the end footage, but he was just sort of like, he's like, it's so rare that we get to see these like sand sculptures just get like obliterated. Cause he's like, that's not where we build them. Typically we build them somewhere where people are gonna, you know, see them for like a couple days or whatever. So he's like, I haven't seen all the footage of the tides coming in like that fast, that high, and just like wrecking these sculptures. And he was like, I'm looking forward to watching some of the stuff. Cause he's like, we didn't get to see it. He's like, we would do the sculptures, we would do the judging, and then you need to like get out of there. It's very dangerous. So he's like, at best, you know, we could see them from the like the cliffs sort of overlooking, seeing it far. But
so interesting as an artist to see your work be destroyed like that.
Yeah, exactly. It was interesting talking to him too, because he does talk about like just like as a sand sculptor, just like the nature of fleeting art. Because he sculpts in other mediums as well, also other fleeting mediums like snow and ice and stuff like that, but he also does like steel and stuff. And he's like, it's such a different mindset when you're like, oh yeah, this is gonna get destroyed. There's no two ways about it. And then he's like, and then there was this thing that's on CBC where it's gonna get destroyed today. He's like, everything that I'm doing today is getting taken out by the Bay of Fundy like today. Like, so anyway, his question was pretty lighthearted all the same. He wanted to know is, what is special about your favorite socks?
I have a couple different pairs.
Oh,
so I mean, I think they're fun. I've got some with octopi on them, which is
I have a question then. Are you going to be doing a debate?
Yep, doing a debate on the 14th.
what socks will you wear to the debate?
Ooh. Probably the octopus socks, which are pretty great, mm-hmm. or I've got some that's a unicorn fighting a narwhal, and they're like sword fighting, like
crossing horns.
Yeah. So those ones are pretty good too. Mm-hmm. And then I've got pirate tiger socks, which are also pretty good.
Uh-huh. Were these gifts? Were these things you bought yourself?
The first one was a gift. The other two I purchased for myself.
Nice. And
so.
I was going to say, question number five is, what question do you want us to ask your next guest, who we don't know who is going to be? Putting you on the hot seat, Sam. Sink or swim.
I'll keep it light, since I have no idea who it is. And I don't.
Okay, it's a sound strategy.
Probably, what's your favorite, what cult hit would you recommend? Either music or film? You know, what's something that you don't think a lot of people will have heard of, or has perhaps been, might be a little out there.
That's fair.
That.
Please.
I was actually just watching some clips of this before your show. Mm-hmm. Is the 1966 Batman and Robin?
Okay.
Which is.
Shark repellent. Some days you just can't get rid of a bomb.
Exactly. I was watching the Some Days You Can't Get Rid of a Bomb. I love the movie. It's so funny. The writing is just so silly and lovely. And the Flash Batman Gordon series movie from 1980. They're not the those aren't the most obscure of things, but they're two that I think bring a lot of joy. The Flash Gordon movie is actually pretty bad, but it's so funny.
Yeah.
And if you're into that
Batman,
sort of like...
Batman, though, like the Batman 60s like TV series and film are much, much, much fun. Because when you're a kid, you're just like, this is just zany. When you go back and watch them as an adult, you're like, oh, no, this is like clever and witty, and there's wordplay. And like there was a group of writers that were putting in way more effort than they had to sell that product.
Yeah.
And Flash Gordon, on the other hand, though,
like, Flash Gordon is not on that same level of writing.
No, not at all. But I don't know. That's what's on my mind since I was just watching this. Some days you just can't get rid of a bomb. It's just so absurd.
Yeah, it's amazing.
And I love it.
I have the one I have at the tip of my tongue, or at the tip of my forehead, I guess, whatever, is the one I recently saw at Montreal's Fantasia Festival, a film called Beyond the Infinite 2 Minutes. And it's a film where a guy... lives in an apartment above the cafe where he works, and he basically finds that his TV in his apartment is a live feed of the cafe downstairs 2 minutes in the future. And then they basically like play with that for about an hour and a half in like the tightest, like it's also perfectly timed. So it's like if someone's is saying something downstairs, you could set a stopwatch that 2 minutes later in the film, they will be downstairs saying that.
You got to appreciate that level of detail.
Yeah, exactly. It's perfect. Like if you look at some of the, like, I mean, not to say that that's necessarily available, but if you look at even just like Fantasia kind of talked about it, the making of, they were like, they had timers and stuff on set to make sure that it was perfectly timed. And when you're watching it, you wouldn't know if it was or not, but like, it is also has that attention of detail and is like super cute, super charming. And just like, it's shot as though it is a single take. There's a couple of, I guess, like cinematographic like tricks to, I don't think it was a single take. They didn't do this perfectly in an hour and a half, but it is like shot.
Virtually impossible.
Yeah, exactly. That's it. It was shot to give the illusion of a single take. Like it's like the camera follows the cast around. Yeah. I don't know how or when this movie could get distribution, but I was like, it is a movie that you could like watch with your girlfriend, watch with your parents, watch with kids. Like it is a universal movie that anybody could watch, and it's like super charming and super fun.
Actually, mention just one more because I remember this from Fantasia. Those two just came off the top of my head, but I don't know if you guys ever saw Turbo Kid. I think it's actually
Quebec-owned Turbo Kid. We almost had them on the show, and then it like weirdly fell through. Through no fault of their own or whatever. It was like a scheduling thing. We were supposed to have the Turbo Kid guys on the show.
So. It's that movie just brings me joy in a different way. I thoroughly enjoy it.
Lawrence, deep cult cuts.
Mine is a movie I only watched recently for the first time. It's called Phantom of Paradise. It's like a it's like a rock opera make of Phantom of the Opera. And it's like a, instead of it being like a phantom and an opera singer, it's like a rock and roll tycoon. And it was just, I researched it and apparently it like bombed horribly, but then it had like a cult resurgence, Phantom of the Paradise. And it was just so much fun. Though, like, and it was campy and weird. I can't say that it was good, but it was entertaining. I can't say that I was like, this is
enjoyable,
good film,
I'm sure.
But I was fucking captivated. I could not look away. I was not on my phone. I had to pay attention to everything that was happening the entire time. And it was an experience. So if that's something you're looking for, Phantom of the Paradise. Oh, for sure.
I will also say, since we did not talk about wrestling, if this was a few years ago, I would say Chikara.
Chikara Pro Wrestling. But now, no, they're canceled. They got Me Too'd. We don't support that. No.
But just as a product, just having like weird superhero and like time travel elements in the world of pro wrestling and like, and all of that, just like really taking pro wrestling as a concept and running with it. But as Lauren said, it's variety of people who were involved were not good people, so on and so forth. But that it was
not good people.
A bunch of people were good. There were a lot of workers and stuff who were fine in it. It wasn't like the entire structure was awful. Just some of the people who were running it turned out to be shitheads. So, yeah.
Shitty people.
Unfortunately.
So, yes.
Thanks for the recommendations.
No problem. Thank you for coming on the podcast.
So, I mean, I guess like the big message is obviously to
go vote.
Go vote. And a green vote does matter. Mm-hmm. You know, any vote does matter. It makes a difference.
Yeah, exactly. It's one of those things where it's like the right to complain about how things are is drastically diminished if you're not voting.
Yeah.
Actually, George
people love complaining about the way things are.
George Carlin said the opposite. George Carlin said that, you know, I'm allowed to complain because I didn't vote for these fucking people.
Yeah, I didn't vote for any of these idiots.
I didn't vote for these fucking people. I can bitch about all I want.
I guess my answer to that is, you know, if you don't like anybody in politics, get into politics.
That's
you know?
It's true. That is true.
If you don't feel as though...
The story of Sam Fairbrother. I don't like the things that are going. I'm going to get involved in this political group, and here you go.
You're
going
to be up
and
there.
I did find people I did like.
You're going to be up there in a debate, and you're going to be like, "Look, a fortune cookie told me to be here." I'm so sorry.
Who here can deny the cosmic powers of the fortune?
Are you going to
argue? It's an interesting angle. I'll think about that and see how that's gonna
pan out. Mark Garneau and ask him to concede. Be like, you've been to space, but space is on my side, motherfucker. And then you just let it. You just let it stay in the air. Don't even react. Don't say anything else. Yeah.
Sam, good luck in the debates.
Thank you very much.
Good luck, obviously, in the election, and obviously, good luck as you mentioned. You are a young, politically motivated environmentalist. So what I imagine is going to be a long career in the world of environmentalism.
I hope so. Yeah.
So thank you so much, Sam.
Yeah. Thank you guys for having me. I'm going to head out to Honey's for trivia night.
Yeah,
my girlfriend just texted me that they need help. So.
Oh, no.
They hurt sometimes. So have a good night, guys. Yeah,
don't Thank close. Hey there, loyal listener who listens to the show all the way past the closing credits. Thank you for listening to Go Plug Yourself. We really, really appreciate it. If you enjoy the show, I cannot stress this enough. Please tell people about it. We don't really have a budget for marketing or fancy Facebook ads or putting up billboards on the street. We really have to rely on word of mouth, which basically means that if you listen to the show and you enjoy the show, please share it, link it, tell your friends about it. Say, hey, there's this show called Go Plug Yourself. They talk to Montrealers or people that have stuff going on in Montreal or just people that have stuff to promote that we kind of care about. We can go outside of Montreal if we want to. So just tell people about the show. It's a fun show. We like doing it a lot. We've done it for over 200 episodes, and it's in large part thanks to support from people like you. If you want to support the show at all, you can go to patreon.com/9to5cc and throw a couple bucks our way. It really helps with the hosting fees for the most part. We're really not trying to make a profit on this. And also, if you want want to be a guest on the show, or you know someone who might want to be a guest on the show, you can contact us either on Facebook or on Twitter. There's a bunch of ways to find us and let us know. And if the scheduling and the timing and everything works out, maybe you can be the next person who comes on the show and plugs something. Big thank you, as always, to Leland Beckman and Oral Turpitude, who provided our theme songs. And, of course, a thank you to all of the hosts that we have on the show. Walter J. Ling, who is technically retired but still sometimes hosts, Christopher Vendito, Lawrence Korber, and Ines Anaya are all amazing co-hosts, and you should support them and their comedy and all of that. Thank you for listening. Thank you for choosing Go Plug Yourself as one of your from the millions of podcasts, and have a beautiful day. Thank you.
905.cc, podcasts, blogs, and comics, made in Montreal since 2011.